Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of MacTalks TV. This is the Immediate Reaction Podcast. We are reviewing episode 5 of House of the Dragon. I'm your host, Lee. Here, I'm joined by my sick co-host, Spencer. Spencer, how are we doing today?
Oh, I'm feeling like a combination between Hugh's daughter and Aegon on his deathbed. But, you know, I'm always hoping House of the Dragon will give me a perk up.
See, most of the time when we're sick on the podcast, we don't necessarily just sell the other person out like that. But I feel like it would be like saying, hey, come on in. Aegon's fine. Like, people are going to hear. They're going to know. Like, when they hear your voice, they're going to know. So I had to kind of go ahead and let them know, you know.
There's a certain element of the plague that is going around, but I shall persevere.
I have no such plague. You can call me Aemon One Eye. I am prepared to rule in your stead.
The metaphor, did you do this to me? Should I blame you?
I don't think Aemon did it. I was the guy on the last podcast making that case. Yeah, I'm prepared to carry the heavy lifting here on the talking. Spencer's under the weather, but he is here, podcast professional that he is, of course. And we are reviewing episode 5, a yet unnamed episode. I am just done guessing the episode names until Tuesday. They release them on Tuesday. How about that? We'll know on Tuesday what the hell the episode name is, because I've failed a couple weeks on that. So, you know, we'll find out on Tuesday what the episode name was.
Would the show benefit from actually having a title card at the start of each episode? Would that be useful, or are they so afraid of title spoilers that they're not ever going to give us that again?
I'm sure that they are thinking that the only people who care about the episode titles are like people like us that just are way too into it, that the vast majority of the audience doesn't care, and that is probably true. And they are probably worried about spoilers. So, and you know, so many people have read this story that I think that they know if they give an episode title, it will clue in 20%, 25% or something of the audience that's read the story as to what it is. So it's actually probably smart to do, but it just annoys me because I like episode titles. I geek out on them.
Well, I can say, meaning very well and not intending any criticism behind this, no title would have spoiled what this episode was. Of where this was an episode that felt like it was touching about 8 swords that were in the fire and giving us a little bit of each. A necessary transitionary episode after a climax that was the Red Dragon and the Gold, I guess.
They absolutely could spoil it. Let's go through some spoiler names they could have used. They could have used the twins. They could have used Prince Regent.
And it would have spoiled less than 10% of the episode.
The Brackens. They could have had something like that. Yeah.
That would have been misleading as hell.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. Yeah, there's probably something better they could have done with that storyline as far as an episode title. But those are kind of the main storylines. I mean, it was a mishmash, that's a good way to put it, Spencer, of like a lot of different stuff going on this episode. I'll try to list off the main ones that I noticed. You tell me if you noticed anything else. I think we had Aegon returning with Meleys' head, which I will go long form on Wednesday about how terrible that was. And this isn't like, I think the dragons are awesome, please don't hurt them. The dragon's dead. I don't care what you do with the head of it. It was bad politics. It was terrible politics to do that.
That was easily my favorite part of the episode, was the crowd reaction to seeing what they viewed as the head of a god being carted in like a trophy.
Yeah.
And just how quickly, not Cole, Cole's stubborn as hell, but say Gawain Hightower realized what a mistake what they were doing was. And the horror that was radiating through the crowd at effectively the sin they had committed about what they had been raised to believe were immortal divine beings. It was lovely. It was a well-executed intro scene to the episode.
So that, Aegon coming in, and then the election of the Prince Regent by the Council. I think you can kind of combine that with a transitionary period for the Prince Regent, where you have some of his early orders being executed, the cutting down of the rat catchers. The dog is still there! The dog is still there, loyal dog! Shout out!
You haven't watched Futurama, but they're going so Fry's dog, it's lovely.
And, of course, Hugh, right? And Hugh, at this point, is our stand-in for the people of King's Landing. That's who we're seeing as an example family of King's Landing and what they're going through. And the relevance, you know, I've argued about, like, well, that seems a little suspect that they would just show us this random guy. There's no relevance to the plot. Well, kind of it is, right? Because Missarya is making the argument to Rhaenyra, hey, the people of King's Landing are suffering. They could turn. It's good to have an example family to give us that first person of what she's talking about. So I actually think the following of Hugh in this episode did actually make a lot of sense for me. So that's the King's Landing stuff that we had. We also had Corlys going through it on Driftmark, just dealing with it, his struggles. We had Rhaenyra, who is also kind of going through it on Dragonstone, and Baela and Jace and the council and that whole interaction and them trying to figure out what the next move is. how we move forward with without an army, with one less dragon, one big less dragon, right? Like we got, that was a big dragon that we lost. And
But there are other big dragons, sir, and options for them.
We also saw the twins. We also went to lovely the Frey B&B that we really enjoy so much from the main series. Everybody wants to have a stay at the Airbnb.
You could check in any time you like, but you can never leave. That is the nature of staying with the Freys.
Please come on in. Look, it's great. It's a very welcome hearth.
They'll make vacancies.
You come stay with the Freys. Everybody likes to do it. So we had that whole scene with Chase and everything. And then on top of that, we had Daemon at Harrenhal and the shenanigans there. And it really felt, this episode more than any episode, like Daemon was just flailing in the wind. He was really struggling this episode.
That is the case, and it is reaching a little point that I'm finding aspects of the Daemon storyline, they're intentionally navel-gazing, so I can't call them out too much as being navel-gazing, but it is getting a little old and feels like it's getting a little repetitive now that we're three episodes into Visions that are basically all saying the same thing.
All right. What do you mean when you say navel-gazing?
Navel-gazing, I suppose, isn't the right word here. Navel-gazing usually means a certain aspect of being so content in your own accomplishments and your own brilliance that you can just look down and admire yourself and be content only in that. And aspects of a storyline would do that. I don't think this is that. I think this is, I get it. Move on. You've hit your note. At least vary up your visions of the intent behind them, because the fact that it's his mom, but it's still saying the having this exact same thematic purpose, it's getting a little old to me.
Yeah, okay. Hasn't quite gotten there with me yet, because I still have the tension of just what he's asserting his role is and how he's trying to fold in some of the Riverlands crew. And now we've got it coming from all sides, right? We've got Cole and his folks are potentially coming that way. We've got the Freys potentially coming to join up at Harrenhal, and then we've got the Starks coming through, the twins to come join, and then whatever Rhaenyra is able to pull together to send that way. So it's just a lot of different folks converging there at Harrenhal. I think it's still working for me. I do see what you're saying, though. It hasn't reached the point of me going, all right, let's move it along, but it's not too far from that, to be honest with you.
I think we've reached a point, though, where it's come to a head. The fact that he was challenged for his sins in real time, part of the point of these visions seems to be him processing his sins, what he's sacrificed, what he's lost, what he's given in, what he's dedicated his life to, and to what degree that those are wrongs that he himself acknowledges. Here, he tried to wipe his hands of a deed and get somebody else to do it, same as with the assassins before, and immediately the other lords went, no, this is on you, and we're not going to follow you because you just did this. And I don't think he's ever gotten that kind of real-time call-out. And so what he does with that is important, because so much of these visions have been effectively him being called out in retrospect for the things that he should feel guilty for.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I don't know how much of the visions I am taking as him working through things himself, right? And 'cause like there's this outstanding question of when he's having a vision, is this Daemon almost like a dream where it's all your reality, you created it in your own head and you're just sorting through and processing, or is there some external force that's pushing this onto him? And I still find that question to be open-ended at this point. So I don't know how much of that to take as Daemon actually processing his history, his life, his guilt, his accomplishments, versus someone else like shaking the snow globe for him and just causing chaos.
Whatever the causative factor is, it seems to be having a particular effect on him. I agree. It is an open-ended question about whether it is a witch driving it, it's just natural magic in the realm,
the bed.
His own guilt now being separated.
The bed theory.
Yeah. Yes. We have a lot of different possibilities.
The bed theory. Can we call it the bed theory? That it's the bed. It's literally the bed frame that's doing it.
Yes.
The weirwood bed frame. Just change the bed. You'll be good.
That would be a very... That'd be a very interesting bed review of exceptionally comfortable, good back support, may cause weird visions.
I slept a lot better in the recliner. When I would get up from the bed and go out into the living room, I did a lot better. So I don't know. The bed just wasn't working for me. Yeah, I think we could have a lot of different explanations for what is potentially causing it. I mean, Alice Rivers has got to be involved in that. You called her a witch. I mean, I'm not quite so derogatory with the great Alice Rivers.
I don't view Wood Witch as an insult, but if you do, I respect
or just,
that.
Maybe Aaron all just being just flatly haunted, right, with the old gods. That it's just a weird place. George does this sometimes. He talks a lot about...
He likes weird places.
Yeah, and he
places.
Talks a lot about how he doesn't like his magic to be too specific. So sometimes he will tell you, there's magic here, and magic stuff happens there, and if you want a detailed line-by-line explanation for exactly what that is, you have come to the wrong place, my friend. You're not going to get right. it. And Aaron Hall's one of those places.
There will never be a magic school appearing inside of the World of Ice and Fire. Just will not happen. I think George would despise that almost violently.
Yeah, you're not going to get that detailed breakdown. So who knows what it is, but you're right. It's having a clear effect on him. And I really am enjoying, set the visions aside for a second. I'm just enjoying the fact that when Daemon is told, yeah, go make war, go take the Riverlands, go take Harrenhal, build an army, do it all yourself. Like you have independence in this particular activity. He's failing miserably. Like we've all seen those people like who are like, I should be the boss. Just bring it on. Just let me do it. Let me do it. And then they get given either a slice or the whole cake. Like, hey, go ahead. And then you start to prove why nobody ever wanted them to be the boss in the first place, right? Nobody ever wanted Daemon to take over and be the king. And this is why, because he doesn't have instincts for ruling, and it gets to play out in real time. What I hope happens is that we get a realization from Daemon about this, where he goes, fuck, when I've been left to my own devices, I have fouled this whole thing up. I've pissed the Riverlands off. I have the nicest guy here next to me, helping me out, serving me mutton and goose and all kinds of lovely things every night.
Duck is
I've
better.
Even figured out how to piss him off. Like, I cannot make a friend. Mm-hmm. I actually need to listen to what Rhaenyra says. I hope we get to that point. We'll see.
How do you feel about Jace selling out your dear Lord Chancellor to the phrase?
Absolutely. Do you remember the whole standing tall thing I told you?
Yeah.
Starting to worry. Starting to worry. He's a little too smart. He's a little too brilliant.
He's a little too convinced of his own brilliance. Convinced that he needs to be the one that acts.
I feel like I've got 5 minutes left of Raw, and he's just body slammed everybody in sight. And I'm like, oh no, like don't stand tall at the end of the show. Like this is the worry, is that maybe Jace is assuming the Rhaenys role of being a little too brilliant. I'm interested in the explanation to Rhaenyra. It comes from Jace here, right? It's like, hey, I've got an idea for how we can get more dragon riders. This is a big part of the Fire and Blood Dance of Dragons story is the dragon riders,
dragon seeds,
right? That's what it's called in the book, the dragon seeds. That is not seemingly the way they're going here. They're seemingly going a slightly different angle of saying these are folks that left the Targaryen family, that went and married, like say married a Stark and moved to Winterfell, or married a Baratheon and went down to the Stormlands or whatever, right?
It was delightfully elitist.
And watching that bloodline and then trying to pick from that bloodline folks, right? That is a little bit different than the dragon seeds from the book, which was, which I think you can say without, I don't know how this could possibly be a problem for folks. They were just chasing Targaryen bastards, basically. So it's kind of related, right? It's people with Targaryen blood that aren't in the line of succession or aren't in the, aren't considered to be in the immediate family. But how they're terming it is slightly different.
And it's interesting. I suspect that it's now going to be a process of where they're starting noble because they're elitist as hell. And so the idea of entertaining actual bastards giving them the potential to be dragon riders is unacceptable. But I suspect that when that fails, some people that we already know to be bastards may be able to make a certain claim to the mantle, as it were.
I got a question. When Rhaenyra said, yeah, but their blood would be thin, and Jace looked at her and said, and yet...
was a little bit of,
whoa.
Mom.
Whoa. I couldn't believe he addressed that so like openly with her. Like, look at me. I got a dragon. Like, that's what it felt like he was saying. And I just assumed that would always be danced around in the same tone it was in season one. And it seems like they're addressing it a little bit more directly in private conversations among the family there. But I didn't even get the sense they were doing that in season one.
We already saw that with his conversation with Baelor, right, where he's just openly talking with his betrothed on just that subject. I feel like the guys that make, people that make, Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon, they don't like secrets. And they don't like secrets being secrets for too long, and so they prefer to get them out in the open as soon as possible. I don't think that's really in keeping with the book, where secrets and polite fictions and violently defended lies are just part of the narrative. But maybe they just don't think that would work as well as on a television show, or maybe they just are uncomfortable with the idea of trying to carry that through other plot lines.
It feels a little bit like not respecting the watcher of the show quite as much as George respects the reader. Like, George will give you something on the 11th page of book two, and then it's referenced again in the 900th page of book five, and you're supposed to be able to connect it and, like, you'll be ready to go. Like, he requires that of you as a reader. The show is going to constantly remind you, and this seems like another reminder, but it was a little stunning when he just kind of made that, like, almost joke about it to his mom. That was interesting, and it made me wonder if they've had really open conversations about it before. Like, we did get the conversation where Jace looked at her and said, hey, is that guy my dad? And she was like, I don't know, I love you. And then, like, they ended it, right? She didn't just sit down and go, yeah, he's your dad. Like, let me tell you about when we met. Like, we didn't see that, but I wonder if he did get some version of that conversation for it to be discussed so openly.
Does that become now then kind of a bullshit cutaway, the way we've described before, of where they apparently had that conversation off camera and everybody's okay with it? Is this season three of Ted Lasso if the plot is occurring off screen?
No, I wouldn't put it on that level. It's not quite there. It's on the spectrum, but it's not quite there for me, because Jace is asking the question. It's not weird to me that Rhaenyra wouldn't want to address it in the hallway where we got that particular conversation. And now I'm just sort of fantasy booking, wondering if they had that conversation, but I don't think we necessarily needed it in the intervening years. I have something to announce, though, for you, all of our listeners. Big moment for me. Now, obviously, everybody knows.
Please.
First four episodes, I was riding with Aegon. I really got a kick out of that character. Tom Glencarney, the goat of acting. You've agreed with that on multiple podcasts.
Have you changed loyalty?
Well, Aegon's in a bed now. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can't. I have to elect a prince regent of my favorite character to follow this season, of who I enjoy on screen.
And
Baela. Faux show.
Baela.
Baela's
fun. That was a long time coming.
Baela's a lot of fun. And it wasn't until she bucked Corlys and was basically like, "Stop! Hey, could you stop feeling sorry for yourself?" And he's like, "You're pretty good at this. You should be my heir." And she's like, "Fuck that shit." And walked off. I was like, she's fucking great. I like her.
it was an interesting kind of moment of where she both meant it philosophy-wise, but there was also a certain element of, you're asking me to take a demotion. No. I'm aiming to be queen of the realm, damn it.
No, I ain't doing that. I'm not interested in it. I just like that. She loves riding the dragon, right? Like, she loves riding the dragon. She loves being a dragon rider. She's going to keep doing that. She feels her Targaryen-ness, obviously, a lot more than her Valyrian-ness. And for her to buck Corlys and to do it in a way that works for that type of personality, which she starts right out playing to his pride. Oh my gosh, the halls. I know there are kings and dignitaries here, and your seven voyages, and the Hall of Nine, and all of this, and all the stuff that she was hearkening to his history, his place in Westeros, to then pivot to, you know, you're better than this, right? Like, it was left unsaid, but it was the tone was, you got to kind of come around and help here. And the end of starting with his ego and his history and his place in Westeros, I thought was just brilliant. And then, you know, the sass all the way through it. I just fantastic. And it, you know, you might be questioning here, Spencer. I'm sure you are. Why would you go from Aegon, who can't tie his own shoes, to Baela, who seems capable of absolutely commanding this
war? I can't even hazard a guess, really.
Do you know the Venn diagram of how those two could be connected at all? Why they would both be my favorite characters?
Dragons?
Well, I am going to pick a dragon rider. That's true. That's a good call. It's just entertaining on screen. Like, it's not... It's when that character's on screen, I perk up and I'm excited. And that's what the Baela character has brought this season. Is every time... It's like a pound for pound type thing, right? Every scene she's in, I'm interested. Have you seen a boring Baela scene? Because I don't remember one, and I certainly didn't get any boring Aegon scenes this season. So that's kind of how I'm basing that. But she was a lot of fun this episode.
I'm curious to ask you then, what was your overall opinion of the episode? I definitely wouldn't rank it in my top three even of the season, though I still thought it was well produced. Where's your opinion lie?
I liked it. I liked it quite a lot. I thought it was top. Maybe two or three. It's not my favorite of the season so far, but it's a top half for me. It's a heck of a lot better than episode three, that's for sure. I liked it a lot because I love fantasy. Like, I read fantasy books, but I also particularly like the genre of epic fantasy. Mm-hmm. That's the genre I like, right? So if somebody offers me, like, hey, read this fantasy book and it's like a fantasy heist, I'm like, that's not really for me. Like, I kind of need the 1,400 page tome with 700 characters. And that's what this felt like. We were hopping around. We were in a lot of different, where there's a lot of interconnecting plots. Like, how everything is converging in Harrenhal really feels to me like epic fantasy. How you got a POV chapter over here, there's a casual mention of Harrenhal, another one over here, and you're thinking as the viewer, reader, oh man, how is, what's the pacing of this? How is this all going to come together in Harrenhal? So that's, it was the type of storytelling I really like.
Good deal.
All right, so anything else on this episode?
It's going to be interesting to talk about. I feel like this next episode is going to require us on our longer recap to make predictions, because so many plot lines have now been nudged in motion of where kind of the Rube Goldberg device of inevitable results of casual actions are going to come to pass. So I feel like we need to add a segment at the end of what are our predictions. We haven't done that before. The show's a different enough thing of where I feel like we can be careful about it, but I'll be curious to see some of your thoughts.
Yeah, we can do that for sure. We can talk. We can talk some predictions, and hopefully we'll have a little time for spoiler talk. We'll try maybe to slow the
mix those two together.
If we can get the recap done in less than 3.5 hours, then we can get there.
A challenge.
Yeah, it's hard, and this is a heavy dialogue episode, right? So it will be particularly hard. I also shout out to the Sea Snake's whole everything this episode. That
his,
worked for
his
me.
His grief, his process, his resistance to Rhaenyra. I also liked Rhaenyra's coming to terms with the fact that she isn't God's chosen, that she has weaknesses, she has gaps, but she needs people to assist her with those. That's been a long time coming, but it's good to finally see her reach that kind of realization.
So people are like, are you team black? Are you team green? So the way I answer that question now is I just want to tell people, I really like Aemon and Rhaenyra. So there you go.
Well, there you are. Well, now they're in charge.
Yeah, I'm kind of digging this version of Rhaenyra post when she got back from that god awful scene and see. Look, you gave it to
through
me, Spencer.
The screen. This is how catchy
what
it
happened.
Is.
You put it through the microphones. It's like smell-o-vision. You gave it to me. Went through the tubes and wires. Yeah, like this Rhaenyra post that god awful episode. It's episode 3 scene. When she's come back and she said, okay, here's why I did what I did and here's where I'm going, like, it's all jiving for me. Her this episode, like, with that conversation with Jace where she was like, I got the impression that Rhaenyra was doing everything she could not to look like she was just feeling sorry for herself in front of her kid, but also wanting to answer his question. Like, it didn't feel whiny. Like, she was trying to still, like, say, I know I'm the queen, I gotta buck up here, but here's why I'm a little fucking annoyed. Like, this sucks. Like, I don't like it. All of that worked for me. I don't know about you.
I did. We talked before that one of the biggest flaws of her reign so far, and this applies equally to the Greens, is not talking to their advisors or their heirs. Not keeping them in the loop as to what your thought process was and why you're doing the things that you're doing. And she seems to be making a much more active effort of that, not only with her heir, not only with people that are key to her family, but even some of her advisors. There was a, frankly, rather open conversation with, I always mix up his name, is it Massey, or which is the guy that she said to Harrenhal?
Broom.
Broom. That was a rather open conversation that she had with Broom, and a certain measure of trust in that. It was a certain kind of, you're the dissenter, and to a certain degree, I respect that. So here's what I'm going to tell you what's going on.
It's also kind of fun when he's like, you're kicking me off the council, and she's like,
yes, but no. Yeah. There's a more complete picture.
Yeah.
Your
kicking
bags are
off is such a strong phrase. Like, yeah, she clearly is kicking him off the council, but is sending him to do something important too. Like, it's not a complete, like, you're out of my circle.
Yeah, the fact that his bags are already packed and his ship is ready to sail and every other detail along those lines is incidental, truly.
Yeah, I like Jace a little bored with the strapping, hair is always wet, I'm nice to everybody, I have all the answers. Like, it's a little too standing tall for me. I do like Bela, though. I'm really interested in her because there's weakness in her. Like, she flies hot, she gets angry, she does stuff she's not supposed to do, she's not suited for every task, but she is still very much taking her skill set and honing it as best she can in support of Rhaenyra's cause. And it happens to help that the actress delivers the lines fantastic and the writing for her is particularly good. And so everything about the Bela character is working. The Jace character is starting to bore me a little bit.
I'm kind of in the same camp there, I think.
All right. So there we go. Episode 5, I think a real transition episode, a lot of stuff going on. We're going to be back with you on Wednesday. Spencer's going to, he's going to rest, a little throat massage. He's going to get some green tea, mother's milk, a little mother's milk he's going to do.
Just milk of the poppy. Just nothing but that. Nonstop milk of the poppy. Oh, all okay. Day, all right. Every day.
Scrap all that. Just a bunch of milk of the poppy. He'll be back with us in about the same form as Aegon was this episode then for episode 5. Our full review on Wednesday. I'm excited to do it, Spencer. Excited to talk to you. We will go through our recap, and as Spencer promised, we'll do a little bit of predictions there because we're setting up for a really fun final 3 episodes of this season. So thanks everybody for listening, for watching. We hope you have a great start to your week, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
Good stuff.